Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 419th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Jennifer Liao. You can check out her website, jenniferliao.com, and see all the awesome TV shows she directs. Thanks for listening. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enloe. Today, it's just me and Oren on the mic talking networking.
I think it's Oren and I. No, Oren and me. Oren and me. Do you want to take that again, or you want to just keep going? This is why you love the Oren and Matt episodes. When we have guests, I feel bad correcting Matt. You know, I just let him run with all the grammatical mistakes.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. You should see
alleged mistakes.
You should see me without guests.
I have for 55 years. We're talking about networking. Why you do it, why you should do it, why you love to do it, and maybe a couple tips and tricks along the way on how to build your network without feeling like a schmoozy doofus.
It's kind of like a long catch up because I think we've both been networking a lot. We had some past episode where I mentioned that I enjoy meeting other directors, and then just a bunch of directors came out of the woodwork and wanted to chat with me. I think I might have even mentioned that on the podcast already, but I have been having a lot of coffees, talking to a lot of people, and it's been fun. It's kind of eating up a lot of my time.
yeah, but, which is, you know, yeah. we did such a good job. We made show notes, and that is one thing that is not on our list is buyer beware, right? Like, especially when I was younger and there was a little bit more of a scene that I was a part of, I would spend a lot of time networking. And at a certain point, I was like, oh, I'm spending more time networking than I am writing and directing and editing. And this is one of those things that is work and does build your career and brand and
your network
group, your network, but also it cannot come at the cost or detriment of all the things that it takes to build a career.
Yeah, it's funny. Another thing we didn't put on our list is what to network about. To me, I always think of a successful career, and oddly, I've talked a lot about this recently with various people, is making stuff to show people and then showing people that stuff and hoping they hire you to make more stuff that is similar to the stuff that you showed them. And then hopefully that stuff you can show to new people, right? So that those are the two steps of a directing career: making things, showing it to people, making more things, showing it to more people.
Yeah.
And eventually that cycle, you get enough momentum in that cycle and you don't need to make things without people asking you to make them. Right. And you get paid for them.
You know, I think that there is a little bit of pushback there, because it's easy to just be like, well, I've made it now. But like, all of the commercials are kind of a different deal. But like, all of the filmmakers that we look up to do still self-generate. Right. Like,
yeah, I mean, still, even like a Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who have an unlimited amount of work and opportunities, could just be acting in movies or directing movies all day long. They're still writing their own stuff. But but they also team up with a lot of other people that probably do a lot of the writing, and then they go to the meetings.
Sure, but I think they're still pretty involved in it. I mean, I'll say this. There's that news piece just recently where David Lynch was his movie got rejected by Netflix.
No way.
He had an animated film that he was, that would have been spectacular, that was rejected by Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were right, and I will accept that pushback. It is, as a filmmaker, making and writing your own things will always help you grow. And, but the other thing is, let's say you directed a short film with some cute kids in it, and then everyone wants to direct you, hire you to direct short films with cute kids in them, but you really want to do like bloody action dramas, then you have to, you know, make that and then show it to people. So the momentum is still in play because now you have so many more people to show it to.
Totally.
But I guess the big point that I was trying to make is that while today we're going to talk about all the people you can show things to and talk to and network with and grow, you know, that this will really satisfy that second part of showing people things in the hopes of making this your career. It still very much relies on the fact that you've made something to show these people or to talk about, or even if you're a PA on a movie and you want to talk about your experience doing that, like this is in conjunction. Networking is just half of the puzzle. The other half is the filmmaking.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's really, really important before we dig into all of our bullet points, people hear networking and they think that it is sometimes a way for you to get something from someone.
Right. But there's something kind of thirsty or sleazy about it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That you're just kind of there. And like,
do you think that still is that, like, I know that was the case like 15 years ago when we were kind of new in this business. I don't feel the stink on that term anymore.
People don't feel the stink on the term for sure. But like, certainly if you're in a different market or something, you can hear people refer to like fake Hollywood. And I think that's one of the things there's a lot of like aspects of fake Hollywoodism or that perception. But I think one of them is in people being fake and not wanting to help one another or build community or listen to what the other person has to say, that it's, you know, enough about you. How can you help? Enough about me. How can you help me? Is kind of like the old cliche joke. Certainly I have been at screenings and other places, festivals and stuff, where people are still kind of just like trying to shove a postcard into your hand and tell you to go to their screening and don't really have a ton of interest in what you have to say or who you are at all.
Yeah, but don't you find that more common with like these kind of new filmmakers?
Maybe. Yeah, certainly. The more you have to offer, the less guarded one tends to be about that. You know what I mean? Like, I think like when you're coming from a place of confidence and connection and familiarity, yeah, you are less eager to just kind of brush people off. But still, I think there's still schmoozy people who have credits and stuff. The big takeaway of networking, or the big caveat, is just don't sell. It's not about sales. It's about community. And when there is an opportunity, when someone says, oh man, I am actually looking for a comedy director, then you know, feel free to be like, oh yes, here are the things that are great. But it's about meeting and knowing people rather than like shoving your agenda down their throat. You're smirking, you disagree.
I both agree and disagree. It's obviously you never want to shove agendas down people's throats. However, I do believe that the ultimate goal of this networking is to find a way. I remember I had a meeting with Lawson Deming once, our friend that has the VFX company, Barnstorm VFX, that does, you know, Man in the High Castle and Ted Lasso and all these great shows. And he said, after we talked for 10 minutes, okay, so let's cut to the chase. Are you going to hire me or am I going to hire you? And, you know, because I also work as a VFX artist and as a director. So sometimes I hire VFX artists. Sometimes I get hired as a VFX artist. And I was like, I kind of love that attitude, you know, like where, which is a different way. Maybe it's like a more crass way of saying, hey, how can we find a way to work together? What can we partner on? What can we collaborate on? And I do think that you don't need to find that answer immediately. Like today I had lunch with our friend Charlie Fonville, a producer who's doing a lot of comedy specials right now, which are, while I do enjoy watching them, they're nowhere near my wheelhouse of something that I want to direct or would be hired to direct. But, you know, I do think us keeping aware of what each other is working on is helpful down the line. And maybe if I do need someone to do a comedy special, or that knows a certain person that he might know, or he needs something from me, a commercial or whatever, we're reminded of each other, what we're each other is working on.
So in both of those situations, I'm not saying that like networking is not transactional. I think it can be, and relationships can be, right? This is a town of reciprocity. But what I'm saying is that the Lawson example is the easiest one. You both are aware of what you bring to the table. You are on equal footing. One of you is going to hire the other, and you are unsure of who is going to do what when, but you both are bringing opportunities to one another. Right.
Right. But also he was not afraid. Right. But he was not afraid from the very beginning of our meeting, because I came to kind of get a tour of his office.
Sure.
From the beginning, it wasn't like, hey, we're just hanging out because we're old buddies and we're going to have lunch because we love eating. That's
what a barbecue is for, is what you're saying. Or like a birthday party.
Yeah, I'm just saying, not that you should sell, but that you and I have been in the situation where someone who we don't know wants to meet up with us, and we're 30 minutes into a coffee and we don't know why we're meeting up with them. You know,
sure.
They haven't. Sure. They don't have specific questions for us. We don't have much use of the meeting. And this is kind of like the dirty secret about networking. Like when I did mention on the podcast that I'm trying to meet more directors, and I did get directors reach out to me, like I'm not going to just meet up with any single director in the world. You know, the two directors that I did meet up with are directors who sent me a message, said hello, said, I heard on the podcast you want to meet. I'm in LA. I'd love to grab coffee. And then of course I went, I checked out their website. I checked out their work. I'm like, oh, okay, you do a similar thing to what I do. Or we are in the same circles. We're kind of at the same level. You know, like if someone had just moved to LA, had never made anything and was like, hey, I'd love to have coffee with you, I'd be like, you're more than welcome to email me and ask me a question or whatever. But I don't have the schedule that allows me to just have coffees with 1,000 people. I need to be kind of selective. And so I do think while it's not selly, these, like when you meet people, especially people that you don't know, it's smart to have
to be
some
direct.
Common goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And figure out a way you can help each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think, and look, you know, the instances where like I'm going to have a phone call with a up and coming filmmaker because our mutual friend asked us to. I'm the only one that took him up on it, but that's a different deal. Happy to like do my buddy a solid and help this young guy out.
Someone's like, hey, what are companies that are good at lifestyle video? I'll be like, oh, I like these companies, you know, like I'm not too good to like respond to questions, but to have an actual meeting.
Have a question.
Have a purpose for that meeting.
Yeah.
100%. Even if it's just to hear about what each other are doing and figure out a way we can maybe work together in the future. And it shouldn't be that, you know, like you and I ultimately don't hire PAs. We don't hire grips. We don't hire, you know, on occasion we'll recommend a makeup artist or something, but, you know, we don't hire coordinators or even producers that often. So, you know, like having a meeting with us in the hopes of getting a job like that is like pretty pointless.
Yeah. So then why do we network, Oren?
That's a great segue, which I'm going to immediately ruin by just giving a quick overview that we're going to talk about the why we network, who we network with, how we make connections, talk a little bit about the hierarchy of those connections and how we make them and where we make them and what we network about. And then we'll kind of try to sum it all up. So back to your great segue, why do we network? And to just double down on what I said, number one is ultimately to build a career, or another way to say it is to get work, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that this one, look, that's the underlying current to all of this, which is why I'm excited to talk to you a little bit more about some of the other categories, but really it's to get work, and everything else is kind of secondary, honestly, whether that's support or educational or whatever, the stuff that we'll get into. To that end, though, you know, that circles back to be a giver, not a taker. So like getting work doesn't mean, okay, how are all the, how can you hire me all of these different ways? But like, what's going on? What are the pressure points that the person that you're talking to is feeling? How can you help and be of service to them, or be a connector for them, introduce them to the right person, all of that stuff, the catalog of people that you know, and the skills that you have, and the craftspeople that you know, that's part of what you're bringing to the table when it comes to meeting up with anyone. And that is a way of getting work. And when you refer other people, they refer you, and you get a good halo effect around all of that, you know?
Right. And one of the hardest things to figure out as a director is how to have the confidence to believe that you are not asking for a job, but you are saying, hey, this project would be so awesome if I directed it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too, and sorry, it is kind of selling, but if you meet with a producer or with an executive producer, or someone that has a production company, or someone that's, you know, that hires directors, it's not like, hey, please hire me. It's, hey, I'm an expert at this. I do comedy. I do celebrities. Mm-hmm. I do this. I'm also a writer. I'm also a visual effects artist.
Sure. But if say I'm a producer, we're having coffee and I'm like, ah, you know, Oren, I love your filmmaking. I really could use a VFX artist. Who does the VFX on this job of yours? Then that's a perfect tee up for you to say, oh, actually, I did the VFX. I'd love to help you out. If I'm a producer and I say, Oren, I just got a new gig and now I, you know, do lifestyle documentaries.
Right. Then you unfortunately, don't
say, hey, I'm your guy. Right.
Unfortunately, I probably would find some angle like that. I'd say, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love lifestyle stuff, you know, especially if there's like a narrative in it. And then I try to slowly warp it into the things I do. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, oh, did you see, you know, Nathan for you? Or I'll talk about the lifestyle stuff that I like, you know, the lifestyle doc stuff. And then
can you think of a job that you wouldn't want to go for?
Yeah, I'm like pitching on three right now.
Okay, here's an easy example. I really am looking for somebody who does like survival first person documentary series in, you know, something really raw, maybe even the people who are surviving, maybe they shoot it themselves. I don't know. Like a sort of like people who are alone or something like that.
Right. Okay.
I need a producer, not a director. Do you know anyone, Oren?
Yeah. No. And you know what? I actually got offered this pretty awesome opportunity last month, which was for this huge world organization that does sustainable farming or something. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to do like, they have like, you know, billionaires that are like part, sit on the board and give money, and they want to finance a Netflix docuseries about it in some way. And they're like, oh, Oren's this great director and he's done all these things. Like, you should talk to him. And I read the material and I looked at some things and I said, this is really awesome. This is so great. Unfortunately, when it comes to sustainable farming, like I will fall asleep in about 4 seconds into this conversation. Mm-hmm. I wish I was into this. I wish this, but I know so many people that are more perfect really for this job.
Yeah.
So I'm thank you so much for thinking of me. I will 100% watch it, but I think there's better people for this. So, but you know, I would never have that meeting in the first place because we didn't really put this on our bullet point, but you really have to do research before a meeting. Sure. You need to be familiar with what the other person does. Look them up, have a reason for the meeting. Like we said, mm-hmm. Know the genre they work in, know the budgets they work in, know the areas they work in. And you know, I think if you're networking for the purpose of, you know, working on your career, it's helpful to know what they work in. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to reiterate, just triple down that it doesn't mean you're trying to get a job tomorrow. Like Natalie Metzger, a producer, taught us, you can meet a great producer and just stay in touch with them and they might hire you, and it might be too early in your career for them to hire you. But 5 years down the road, they might see a project that's perfect because you sent them the sample about pogo sticks or whatever. And there's a movie about pogo sticks. Yeah.
Is there a documentary about pogo sticks?
There was, but it accidentally jumped off sprung off a cliff. I don't know.
Yep.
Need to work on my pogo comedy.
Yeah. You'll bounce back. let's talk about inspiration real quick. Because I want to, inspiration is one of the other big things, right? Like, and that can work twofold, right? You know, there's the like, oh man, I just had coffee with Oren. He's doing really cool stuff. I should talk to that person. Or like, oh, you know, their anecdotes, their stories, the things that they're talking about can get you inspired to like develop your own version of that or to follow in their footsteps. Just to know that there's other business out there and that like what's happening business wise, I think is kind of a big thing.
Totally. You and I hung out with Chrissy a couple nights ago and we were talking about like audition tactics, you know, and I think even your wife has been in a ton of HBO shows and acted in a bazillion things, but still just us talking, she was like, oh, maybe I should, I had mentioned how when we do auditions and there's two scenes, my wife will do two different looks with her hair. Just so that she can get an extra opportunity to show. And Chrissy was like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, like, so I think it's even those small tidbits of like, you know, when we had Oren Brimmer on the podcast and he was like, do the first take as like a crazy take, you know, we were like, yes, we're going to do that. And then neither one of us has ever done that, but it's still a fun idea. If I meet with someone, they're either a producer or a director. I imagine people that work a lot more in the narrative space also meet a lot with writers and they meet with actors. And I also meet with DPs because, like, you know, DPs are like constantly reaching out and trying to ask me if I want to grab coffee. And it's hard to like say no every single time. When I meet with producers, it's to find out what projects we can work on together. When I meet with other directors, it's to find out literally tips and tricks. It's like this podcast. It's like, how did you? And also the other big thing, which I'm now skipping all over our list, is like you find out rates, you know, like. It's really hard to know how much a director is supposed to make, like how much you're supposed to be paid, how much you're supposed to ask for. When someone calls you and they're like, hey, Matt, we have a 3-day job. It's a PSA for this. We don't have a lot of money. What's your rate? You know, it's hard as a director to know that. And so the more directors you start meeting and talking and getting ideas of what the ranges are and what's expected of you. So you really learn and get inspired when someone. You know, I like to ask directors about their craft too. Like, hey, I love this spot of yours. Like, how did you come up with it? Or how did you come up with this story? You know, so that's why I network.
Tell me about triangulation, Oren.
You know, we talk a lot about this in terms of casting. You know, you want to cast a famous actor in your movie, but they've never heard of you. Mm-hmm. And the script did not win the Sundance Screenwriting Lab and it's not on the blacklist. How do you cast a famous actor? Well, you contact their agent. Number one, you hopefully give them an offer that is enticing in some way, whether it's monetary or location wise or topic wise. And number three, they happen to know someone that can vouch for you. So that's, you know, and that's when we talk about triangulation.
The first thing is triangulation is what you're describing.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's having more than one connection to someone so that you seem legitimate, you know, and because of this podcast, actually, I mean, I can't tell you how many times someone's like, oh, check out this thing or check out that thing. Or like I was talking to someone about The Bear, a potential project related to that show. I was like, oh, you know, I worked with Abby Elliott once on a Swiffer campaign. And I know Rene Goubet. He was a dad at the preschool that my daughter went to. So it's like, I already know these two people, but those are the things. Like literally, if you said to Seth Rogen, like, hey, I want you to be in my movie, he'd be like, no. I'm not even going to read your script. But if you're like, by the way, I'm BFFs with Emma Stone or whatever,
sure.
Then maybe he'll be like, oh, Emma, your friends. Right. Oh, this is actually pretty funny.
And, you know, the people don't always lead with, oh, here's the Rolodex of people that I have connections to. Here's who I bowl with. Are you pitching on a commercial with any of these people? No, like that happens naturally in conversation, right? So you have to be, it's a back and forth of like, oh, you know, I'm up for this job. oh, I happen to know this person, etc. Like that back and forth is the thing that has to happen, basically. That's why we network. Who do we network with? Oren, you've already mentioned you like to talk with other directors and producers. When you say producers, do you mean people like in-house at places, at people who represent production companies, freelancers? When you say producers, what do you mean?
I will admit that I cheated using that term because it can mean
all of
a producer
above.
Of a feature film. Like today, yeah, Charlie, who I had lunch with, produces, you know, movies. He's producing your wife's movie, Into the Fog. I'm assuming that's public knowledge.
That is public knowledge, yeah.
He produced a commercial I shot a few years ago. But I also would meet with an executive producer who is someone that pitches on commercials, that has connections to brands and agencies. I would also meet with an agency producer who is the person that actually makes the list of directors, potential directors for a commercial. So I would also meet with a showrunner who is technically also a producer, right? Producer, I guess, I think as...
Broad brush, yeah.
Really broad brush, but it's someone that is spearheading a project in a way that they tend to be involved in either attaching the director or bringing the project to the director, you know, bringing projects and directors together.
Right. Which is why they're pretty high in my list of favorite people to quote unquote network with, you know, to go lunch with. Also, I tend to love them personality wise. I always jibe well with them. And like,
I mean, you've produced many things yourself.
Sure. And I am producer friendly for sure.
Have you ever hired a director?
That's a great question. I've hired a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A
director.
I've recommended directors for sure, but have I ever been in a situation where I'm the producer and I'm not directing? Or I don't think so. The reason I ask about production companies versus freelance is because they represent two very different styles of producer and types of work that they're bringing in, right? So the value that you offer to a producer who's at a company is like there's a more or less a set volume of work that's coming in. They're in-house, they're getting sent jobs, and you're there to help them make themselves look good in front of their bosses, right? Like, oh, I've got Enlo for this. He's the perfect person for this one. Slam dunk. Remember, you worked with him on that other thing a year and a half ago. That went so well. Mm-hmm. That's easy, right? The thing I like about a freelance producer is that they're jumping around. So you're right. Building relationships with all of their coworkers everywhere else as well.
Yeah, and they want to look good. So they're like, hey, I got a person. I got a director that you're going to love. You know,
you're going to love them. They're nice and fast. They're budget friendly. The work is incredible.
You know, I prefer that they say they're expensive, but they're worth it.
But they're worth it. Sure. Fair enough.
Any of those people are great to meet. And they want to know directors also, which is nice. And I guess I had also put on this list companies, which would probably be a producer at a company.
Yeah.
But I think I had a meeting a couple weeks ago with this woman that said, Oren, I like your work. You know, she's kind of talked to me. I don't know if it was intentional, but like as a person in the middle of their career that still has room to move up. But she said, the problem with you is nobody knows who you are. Like I hadn't heard of you. Which is funny to say on a podcast where I assume most people listening to this know who I am. But she said, it's great if people say, oh, we want an Oren Kaplan for this. Like in the same way that you would say like, ooh, the Daniels would be awesome for this. Mm-hmm. Or Martin Scorsese would be awesome for this. Or Catherine Hardwick or an Ava DuVernay or like Bo Burnham. Like having a style, having a name, being a brand name. And I do think that a little part in building up to that is just by meeting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I think there's that. And I think there's also like name recognition comes from not just exceptional work, but work that is different than the rest of what we're seeing right now, you know, like, and also something that makes you memorable. the difference between Spike Jones or Yorgos Lanthimos or, you know, I don't know, just a regular ho-hum studio director is a little bit of brand is what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about.
And the brand exists. You're talking about two of the most famous directors in the world, but the brand exists in commercials too.
Very specific likenesses and names. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if you say I love Spike, there's two Spikes that you could be thinking of, I guess.
But you're talking about like the top 0.1%,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I'm saying you don't have to be an Oscar winner to be like Kim Gehrig or David Shane, like two of the biggest commercial directors in the world, you know?
Sure.
Or there's some documentary directors that are, you know, like in the doc world, everybody knows them, you know, but you and I maybe haven't heard of them. So there, and even when I was an engineer, I would see there would be these engineering superstars that in cryptography, in networking, in databases, like there's these people, there's doctors probably in urology that are, this is one of the most famous urologists in the world, you know? So it's not necessarily that you have to be like world famous where you've won Oscars and everyone's mom has heard of you, you know, like Steven Spielberg.
Right. Fair enough. The thing about that though, is that all of those people, part of what makes them notable is their voice being amplified by press and then awards, right? Notoriety, yeah. I think, comes from being on stage in that way. So like if you're Ira Rosenzweig and you're at the Promax Awards every year for the last 15, 20 years, cleaning house, then you're a titan of the promo world as a for instance.
Yeah. And a lot of people know Ira. I've met many people that know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. I had one of the directors I met with off the podcast last week had mentioned that he had done this tiny, tiny budget job with a producer basically as a favor. And then that producer ended up working for a very famous, like a plus list celebrity production company and ended up bringing him in to pitch on like multiple projects. And finally he landed one. And if you go to his website, the number one spot is from this producer who he did a favor for. Mm-hmm. I think those people are helpful, and meeting companies is helpful too, you know, especially if you're multi hyphenate, like I'm a director and a producer, I'm a director and a writer, I'm a director and an editor. You know, a lot of companies will hire you to edit, direct.
And then they're just like, oh yeah.
Right. Direct. Yeah.
Right.
I do want to, before we move on, I want to just mention the last person I had on this list, because I do think it's important and I do think it makes this whole conversation much more achievable, which is friends, you know, like
networking with friends specifically.
Yeah.
Or do you mean just be healthy?
I know I'm like, oh, you should meet with fancy producers that can hire you and pay you money to direct. That's like kind of an overall nice to have, but also just have lunch with your friends that work in the film industry, you know? And I can't tell you how many times I've done that with someone that I feel like has zero connection to what I do and then end up being like, oh, I should introduce you to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And that is a great segue, I think, to our next section, which is how you make this the connections to network with. Meeting friends is great. And those friends, if they can introduce you to other people that you should meet with, is obviously the holy grail, because like we talked about triangulation, this is like you just mentioned, you just talked to some new filmmaker because a friend of yours asked you to. Like, there's no better way to meet someone without feeling icky about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's your strategy? I mean, I'm trying to think of what I know about you in terms of like the people you've been, you know, networking with over the last year.
Yeah. I think we benefit from having relatively large networks at this point. We do a lot of short-term jobs. And so your crew Rolodex is pretty large. The different companies that you're working with are pretty regularly. And we've got a long history. So in kind of reverse order of like starting with the best, your point about like a referral, if there's a person who I'm like, I really want to meet this person, I would love to do a spot at this company, or I'm applying for this, or I'm going in for a meeting or whatever.
Or will so-and-so read my script?
Or will so-and-so read my script? I'm going to go on to the internet and figure out who I know that knows them. Who do they follow each other on Instagram? Are they connected on LinkedIn? Whatever. It used to be in the good old days, it was just Facebook and you could just see who they're friends with. And it was really simple. But like who do we have in common, and who of that list of people we have in common, who is the easiest person to reach out to? Have I done any of these people a favor? Do we have that sort of relationship? How close are we? Well, how recently have I seen them? Like, all to your point about being with your friends, seeing your friends, it sucks to, like, even if you really like someone, if it's been 2 or 3 years since you've seen them, to be like, hey, I noticed that you know this person, or you worked at this company and I'm pitching there. Can you put in a good word, or do you happen to know anything or whatever? That sucks. And look, sometimes life happens. Like, sometimes,
but there is a version. Yeah. There is a way to phrase that, which sucks less.
Sure.
Which is, yeah. The way you phrase it is, hey, I have a meeting with this company, you know, with Universal. I noticed that you worked in this with the same division, you know, person that I'm working. Like, how are they? Are they cool? Like, any advice before I meet with them? Anyway, I hope you're doing well. Whatever. Like yeah. Low pressure, you know, low stakes email. But I think it's fine to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, you know, the thing that we haven't talked about that's really tricky about all of this is that you say meet with your friends, and also meet with producers and meet with other directors and meet with potential crew and meet with other companies. The waters are so muddy that most of the people that are my friends, I have also worked with in some capacity.
Right.
Unless their kid goes to the same daycare that my kid goes to, if you are at an Enlow backyard party, like, most of these people I either went to college with, or their name is on a call sheet, or vice versa. Right. Do you know what I mean?
By the way, I just thought of a really good AI tool, like a ChatGPT type of skin or whatever you call it, like a mod, would be you basically type in a person's name and you're like, how am I connected to this person?
I'm certain that those already exist.
And it's like, or you can feed a whole call sheet into it and you'd be like, hey, here's a call sheet. Do I have any connections to any of these people? Especially if you're a PA and you can walk up to like the gaffer and say like, by the way, my uncle, you know, is married to your niece.
There's a handful of like lead generation tools, you know, for like more for sales that I think do versions of that. We'll find emails, cross-reference them with, you know, contacts that you have, figure out that sort of stuff. I'm pretty sure it exists already. But again, more in the sales world, because everyone's trying to generate leads. This is not that different, you know?
I even, my last shoot, I kind of looked up the whole cast on Instagram just because I wanted to see like what looks they had, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, you know, like Noah Bajor knows like one of the actresses in our commercial. And then I was like, should I tell her, or is that kind of creepy?
Sure. I think it is a little tricky. It's also like, again, is it reciprocal? Does she follow Noah back?
Absolutely not.
Hard to know.
Noah can
hard
tell to us. Know. Noah, if she follows you back.
Noah, are you creeping?
But in two beeps. If she doesn't follow you back, just one beep.
So the referrals, bringing it all back. You can kind of engineer a referral by doing a little bit of research, basically, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. I mean, a way that I've been connecting with people lately is I'll literally go on Instagram. I will, like, 9 out of 10 times, iCandy, you know, that Instagram account will have some new video posted on there. I'll click on it. And if I think it's not only super cool, but also in the vein of the stuff that I do, I will click on the director's Instagram. They usually, you know, link to the director's Instagram profile. I'll watch their stuff. And sometimes I will DM them and I'll be like, hey, I saw this spot of yours. It's like amazing. How did you do this one thing? And I have almost a 100% response rate. and quite a few people I had brunch with, JJ Adler, you know, a couple weeks ago, just because I told her I really liked her commercial and we didn't really know each other. And she's this awesome director.
Yeah, a very exciting and famous director who also we have friends in common with. So it's a little, that's part of it also is like you can look up Oren and be like, oh, these six people that I like and know personally also follow Oren. Maybe it's a little less weird.
Yeah. And of course, when I reached out to her, I said, I love your work, by the way. We have these friends in common.
Yeah.
By the way, this other thing I've been doing, I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast or not, but when I see a commercial or a short film or a trailer or something I really like, if it's easy, and it's not like I'll spend like an hour doing this, but if I can find out who the DP is and who the production designer is and who the colorist is, especially if it's like a commercial that looks really amazing. I will put them in my notes app. Here's a DP.
Oh, that's nice.
Like I'll find their website and I'll be like, I have like a list of DP websites. I have a list of colorist websites. I have a list of production designer websites. And I find a lot of those by following other directors, by going by following iCandy and then following the directors that I like from there.
Especially when you get, there's certain directors who are just like great artists and, or they're famous or they were on a TV show or whatever, but there's a handful of people that are really savvy who are just like plugged in, networked up, and like, who are they following?
Yeah.
That's the goldmine, right?
I haven't gone that deep, but I mean, yeah, that is,
you know,
interesting.
But there's just kind of general, like, oh, this person's always in the know.
You know? I mean, I will, if I go to a director and I see like, oh, all these people I know follow this director, then it makes me feel like they're worth following. I do want to mention that the one last way to make connections, which is, and I really don't want this conversation to sound like you have to have lived in LA for 15 years to do all these things, because you don't. Like, you could just do a cold email. You could just find a company website and email the executive producer.
You can definitely do that. Have a really good lead. Have a really compelling email. Like, it can't just be like, hey, I'd love to grab a coffee. It's got to be like, hey, I love these spots.
This work.
I followed you this way. This is why I think it makes sense for us to talk. Here it's the value that I add in some way without ever feeling sweaty, keeping it casual, keeping it concise. But also being like, I'd love to work with you, be direct as well.
Yeah, but you don't have to always ask for a meeting too. You can say like, hey, I love this work. Here's my website, by the way.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
But and don't expect any response. Like that's a thing. Send the email and don't expect a response.
Yeah. I to me, triangulation is the way to go.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Right. For sure. Yeah. You skipped LinkedIn. You skipped LinkedIn, Oren.
I skipped LinkedIn because I don't really use it for connections, but tell us, because, you know, we've been flirting with it for the last couple of years. You know, our friend... Yeah. Tony Franklin gave us a crash course on how to use it, and then I promptly forgot how to use it.
Here's a couple of big things about LinkedIn. It's for business people, right? So right now it's rough out there on LinkedIn. There's a lot of like, well, I got let go. You know, if you have friends from any other sector of work, it's tech in particular, video games. There's a lot of people who, it's a bloodbath out there. So my condolences, truly, madly, deeply. But if your feed is not like that, or as people, as the economy changes and, you know, things bounce back, advertising people are on LinkedIn, and film people to a lesser extent. There are some out there, but there's a couple, you get more ambient knowledge. Like, what are the articles people are sharing? What are people reading? What are people talking about? What's the temperature of the world? You can follow all of them. And then also, this is the real crucial difference. Most people on LinkedIn, 95% of the people on LinkedIn are not posting any content at all. So if you are posting, like our friend Jordan Brady, an article once a week, Jordan's in my feed nonstop. And look, we interact a lot. So like the algorithm is really pushing him right now for me, but like the ability to get content, not like, hey, looking for work, not, hey, you know, like honest to goodness, here's a blog post, a Substack post, a meme that you think is pertinent, a little, you know, posting directly in that app, the ability to get eyeballs on that is significant. And also, it's localized to people who could potentially hire you.
Yeah, it is. LinkedIn is like high on my to-do list because I posted this article, like I reposted, somebody from this agency had posted an article where they had like top 10 interesting campaign things, you know, from 2023, and number 8 was like this Pinterest campaign I directed. And all I did was repost it. This is like 4 weeks ago. This week, like yesterday, I got, hey, 18 people looked at your post, you know, and this is from like a month ago today.
That's what I'm saying.
On LinkedIn. And I'm like, what? This is a repost of somebody else's post. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess if I posted things more regularly, it seems easier to get traction there. And like you said, from people who are actually looking to do business, that it's not a dirty word to say like, hey, can we work together?
Yeah. That is a networking website.
Yeah.
That is its sole purpose. 100%.
Yeah.
Well, its sole purpose is to sell our data to companies, but.
Right. It just doesn't have like cool photos of my kid.
But if you posted them.
Yeah.
There you go.
I guess it would.
This is something I've kind of observed over the years, but there is a level of seriousness or intimacy or connection that I've noticed in quote unquote networking or meeting up with people, right? And it's sort of akin to dating. I haven't dated in a very long time. I basically never did, but this is my perception. So there's stuff like there's the casual thing, you bump into somebody at a mixer, an event of some sort. So like our Just Shoot It event are a really easy example of like, oh, you meet the person, maybe you run into them a couple times. It's very casual. You say hello. You're sort of aware of each other. Maybe you follow each other on social media, but like the first connection is an event of some sort. The young alumni in Hollywood event at, you know, Bar Lubitsch, or CAA assistants mixer, you know, like they're just kind of general topic sort of mixers. You know, I think that they're coming back. We're also older. So it's not like you're ever going to go. I did go to a CAA mixer one time at Trader Vic's, which makes me, I don't know, 65. Next up, film festivals, a little bit more specific. You know, people are there to talk about film.
Basically. But is it worth going to a film festival if you don't have a film in it?
It's a lot harder to connect. It's not necessarily, I mean, Cara Durrett would be a good example of a person who you would want to meet. And when she went to South by Southwest that first time, she was just there scouting for filmmakers. So she did not have a film and made it worthwhile for her to go there. As an easy off the top cuff example.
But ostensibly, she was scouting for filmmakers that had films there.
Sure. But she herself didn't have a film there. Right. So I'm saying if you go there with purpose, it can be worthwhile. Your point is like, oh, you're mostly going to meet people who have movies at that festival. But there's a lot of degrees of festivals. You could go spend a week at Sundance for sure. You could also go to the local film night. You know, Noah, our editor, talks about the film society in his town has a midnight screening that they always go to. And I think that's really valuable. Yeah, there are events that are like far less of a commitment where you're not getting on an airplane or getting a festival badge or whatever that are still explicitly about filmmaking in a more meaningful way.
But do you think, just to be hyper weird, do you think you go to like the Lux screening at the Hammer? So, it's these like awesome short films by like amazing filmmakers that are screening in this theater. They screen like 5 short films. They each do like all the filmmakers do a little Q&A at the end. Then there's, you can buy some drinks and hang out. Like, how comfortable are you as someone who doesn't have a film there to walk up to like some random person there and be like, hey, what's up? I'm Matt. I'm a director. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I used to do it all the time. All the time.
Really?
Uh-huh. And it's because the thing about the magic of a networking event is that the reason you're there is to network. Right? And so it's scary. It's helpful when you have a sense that you're all more or less on the same level. I was making a joke about the CAA assistants mixer. If you were an assistant or looking for an entry-level job at an agency or something like that, even if you weren't at CAA or you were looking to meet somebody who was entry-level, it would be okay. It's easier to be like, oh, hey, hello, how are you doing? Are you going to meet some people who aren't interested in you? For sure. Are you going to meet some people where you don't totally connect? For sure. But what inevitably will end up happening is you'll say hello to someone. So I would kind of like look for somebody who like clearly didn't know a ton of people, especially early on. I'd say hello, talk to them a little bit, and inevitably a little cluster shows up because they know somebody or you rope in another person who happens to know another person, and the group just kind of grows and splinters off like an amoeba, right?
Right. And like then when we went to the ASC Awards.
That's
and I was like, hey, we're going to go party at the Roosevelt. And you're like, yeah, it's a weeknight. I'm going to go home.
I did not want to. Yeah, yeah.
8 p.m.
But it was not 8 p.m. I was glad I went home for sure. But that's a good example of like, we run into people. We ran into Matt Miller and Natalie Metzger at that event. Mm-hmm. They introduced us to other filmmakers. So then they kind of end up. They introduce us to them. We talk to them for a little bit. They wander off. Their friend comes up. It's just kind of like an ebb and flow. And so you're not like, I don't think you're spending the whole night being like, hi, I'm Oren. I'm a filmmaker. What do you do?
Right.
It only takes a couple times.
Yeah. I'm like incredibly bad at just walking up to strangers and introducing myself.
But remember, you're there. It's not, you're not at a bar. You know what I mean? Even if you're literally at a bar, like it's not like a random night somewhere. Like you've all got the same color wristband or you're wearing the same festival badge or, it's an exclusive enough event that you know that odds are good,
Yeah. One of the worst experiences of my entire life was when we had the live event at Sawhorse and we just finished setting up all the audio equipment. And I was like, whew, I can finally go meet some listeners. And I walked up to this guy and I was like, hey, how's it going? I'm Oren. you know, just assuming he knew who I was because, you know, he's at my live podcast event.
Sure. Yeah.
I was like, what's your name? And he's like, hey, I'm Matt or whatever his name was. And I was like, cool. Are you here? Are you a listener of the podcast? He's like, what podcast? I'm like, just shoot it. He's like, oh, is this the podcast? I'm like, yeah. It's like, no, I just like went on Eventbrite and saw there was an event happening really close to my house that had free food and drinks. So I came over and I was like, oh, do you work in film? He's like, no, I don't. I'm like, okay. And then I was stuck in like a 20-minute conversation with this person.
That is funny. Getting stuck with someone who is a bit of a leech. Not that this person was, but we all have been in situations where they're just talking. Yeah. Okay, maybe. Yeah, I mean, literally, he did show up to eat our pizza for no good reason. Mm-hmm. But like, they're just talking at you and you can't tell. Or also the reverse of like, you're talking to somebody and, you know, you're maybe having a nice time, but you can see they're scanning the room.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of like look.
That's been me, unfortunately, many times.
Next up, after film festivals, coffee. That's the very casual one. Drinks after work, a little bit more. See, those are kind of on the same page, but like it's later, so it's a little bit more open-ended. Then general meetings, which are less networking, more that's much more formal. But I want to say this is the big thing.
Sorry, this is the hierarchy of how important,
how serious
a meeting is, like a networking event is.
Yes, correct. Here's the ultimate, though. This is the thing people don't talk about. Being on a panel is the best networking.
Because how do you get to be on a panel?
You have to get invited, right? You have to have made a thing. Like perhaps you have a publicist or something. I used to do panels all the time. Then I started a podcast and I burnt myself on it. But you'd be known for a couple things. I would do web series panels all the time. There was a minute where I was doing a lot of like Kickstarter panels when that was new. Right,
so when you're saying a panel is a good networking event, is it's when you happen to be invited to be on a panel.
That's what I'm saying. The very best networking.
I don't know that that's ever happened to me.
It's the best. Well, you've hosted panels, right?
Yeah, but I like
our live shows
together. Yeah,
sure, sure. It is the most privileged relationship you have with people who you admire and who you are familiar with their resume.
I guess when I had my movie was at festivals, like I was, there were some like, oh, we're going to talk about people that made these types of movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And would you like to be one of them? And it's like five directors. But yeah, that one's a tricky one because it's like you have very little control over whether someone invites you to be on a panel or not.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But like,
but by the way, I'm available to be on your panel.
Yeah. Same. But that's
not available.
That is the secret low key best, you know? Yeah, for sure. But to your point, like, I think it was back when I was getting more press, basically, you know,
right.
Press was a different thing. Where do we network, Oren?
So I guess like for me, there's primarily two places that like a networking, aside from a networking event, an event of course is just so fun because there's usually alcohol involved. But if I'm just directly contacting someone this has happened a lot where I'll be like, hey, I live in LA. Where do you live? Do you want to meet in person or should we just set up a call? And nowadays, this is a very post-COVID thing. Like that call better be like a Zoom call or like a Google Meet or Teams, whatever, like a video call, right? It used to be that we would just talk on the phone, which actually, if it's another director, if it's just like us like gossiping, you know, spilling the tea, whatever people are saying nowadays, then I'll just get on a phone call, right? Because I don't need to see them. But if it's like an important meeting in any manner whatsoever, sure. I'll try to get on a Zoom because I think seeing each other makes for in general a better meeting.
Yeah, a call is like effectively if you know a person really well, if it's like a producer who's like, I gotta get Oren on the call on the phone real quick just to like talk some shit real quick, that's fine. If it's a first meeting,
that's not a networking call.
Yeah, that's not like, networking. That's right. Yeah.
We're having a meeting. Yeah, I met this director online. We were talking. I saw some of the companies he's worked with. I was like curious about his experience. I was like, hey, how's it going? How's your experience? And he's like, you know what? I'd rather talk about this on a call. And we actually had a listener, Cade, who had some questions about, or had some, was wanted to chat about some like director rate things. And I was like, you know, this would be easier on a phone call. So mm-hmm. I have no idea what Cade looks like, but I did talk to Cade for like half an hour.
I do feel like, turn your video on. No, Cade, I don't know what your circumstances were, but like, so don't sweat it. But like in general, turn your camera on. Do you know what I mean?
No, but it wasn't like we were on a Zoom call with the camera off. We were literally, he called my phone number.
Oh, gotcha. I'm saying when you're on a Zoom call.
Oh, yeah. When you're on a Zoom call, of course, turn your video on.
Turn your video on. Unless there's a real good reason why. Like if you're just like at the dog park and you're just, or you're whatever, you're chasing your dog around. And
no, that's not a networking meeting. You're talking like if you have to be in some meeting you don't want to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other way obviously to meet people is in person. I've been trying to do like coffee in the morning, right after I drop my kids off, like at 8:45 a.m. Or lunch, because it kind of kills two birds with one stone. And I've been like super selfish recently. I'm like, will you come to Silver Lake? Like, so I can just walk to a restaurant that's by my house.
Yeah. I think, look, there's like a little bit of a power dynamic to that. Because you could spend, if you have like a half hour commute, 45 minutes commute, which is, that's not even, if someone's like, hey, will you come to Playa del Rey or whatever? I'll be like, oh, this is a half a day that we are dealing with. Anyway, plus parking, whatever, it's always going to be about 20 minutes each way, let's say. At a minimum, that's just how long it takes to get places in Los Angeles. So, you know, it's easy to think like, okay, you do like an hour and a half, maybe a little longer, blah, blah, blah. You're talking about 3 hours out of your day, conceivably, like without really breaking a sweat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, if you have a job, a lot of these are kind of hard to do. So I think we mentioned this earlier that sometimes you meet someone and they just don't say anything remotely interesting. Or they're like, what advice do you have on getting into your business? Like,
you're like, you're grasping at straws. You're like, I don't know. What if we start a podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Biggest mistake of my life. No, so I do think like talking about how this meeting came to be, like whether it was we have friends in common that introduced us, or whether it's I saw your thing on Instagram that I loved and thanks for meeting with me.
Let's sure, that's the standard that. Intro of like, okay, yeah, here are the terms under which we find ourselves here.
Yeah, and then I think it's like, so what do you got coming up next and what do you want to do? You know, and like, let's see if we can fit together in any way. It is a little bit why I find like coffees with like random DPs I don't know kind of tricky. Like, what do you talk to them about? Like, you can talk about like, you know, what movies you've liked recently or TV shows you're watching, but it does feel kind of like more of like a romantic date than a networking meeting.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like matchmaking to it.
Yeah. When I do meet with directors, I always will check out their work before I meet with them. And I will almost always have thoughts either like things I love about their work and things that I think like, oh, this spot would be so good. And did you ever think of like recoloring it or like changing out the music? Because I like, that's my dream, is to meet people and say like, I loved, like I had a meeting a few weeks ago where someone was like, I love your Bark Box spot. I think it's really good, but I think the music is really bad. And that spot could be good if the music was better. And I was like, thank you. I kind of thought that too, but like I kept asking people what they thought and everyone picked this music, but maybe I didn't explore it enough, you know? So like, I love getting honest feedback about work, and I give honest feedback all the time. And I do think a lot of people hate me for the feedback I've given them. Cause I'm like, hey, you're awesome. Your work is awesome. But why does this video have to be 3 minutes? You could have told the same story in like 45 seconds and no one is going to watch this for 3 minutes. I actually literally had this exact conversation with, I think it was one of our listeners. It's like, hey, with so-and-so, like, I'm a fan. Here's your work. What do you think of my work? What, do you have any advice on how I would, you know, meet a production company? And I like checked out his work and I was like, dude, your work is beautiful, but like, it's way too long. And he's like, well, it's just my website. And I'm like, just your website. Your website is you. This is like how people decide whether they should hire you or meet with you or consider you or explore your work is based on this. So just you, don't put like the 4.5 minute long thing that could be 45 seconds on your website. Don't keep cutting back to the same shot, you know? Like, give us something that will get us excited and wanting more, not like bored from saying too much. Anyhow, that's what I like to network about personally.
Yeah, I think if people we have in common, the experiences that we've had, right? Especially that could be dovetail off of like who you have in common, like companies that you've worked with. Oh, I worked with this person. I thought X, Y, and Z. Do you agree? You also have on here rates, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, just again, talking compare like notes. People don't like talking about money and, you know, being Jewish. I do find it I'm sensitive of people thinking it's stereotypical that I like to talk about money and rates all the time. But ultimately, I'm just trying to figure out if this is something I can do for a living for the rest of my life. And that is 100% based on numbers. So I like to talk about that. Like, I like to figure out, you know, how people like I mentioned profit participation one time on this podcast, and I have like 5 different people email me about profit participation. Like, what should I be getting a percentage of the budget as a director besides my director rate? Like, yeah, I mean, it kind of depends. Like, that's the stuff you need to learn from other directors who, by the way, when somebody hires you to direct, if they say, hey, we'll give you $1,000 to direct this thing, and you say yes, then you might not know that they were willing to go up to $20,000, you know, but you just said yes to $1,000. So it's just good to know. Or you might ask for $20,000 on a job that really you should be doing for free. So that stuff is just, it's just great to kind of get like a temperature check on those things.
Yeah, I think all of that is great. You know, you're on a real kick of meeting with directors you don't know as well. We know a lot of directors at this point, and like,
right, directors. Nice that, I see something in their work that is exciting to me, like, and I'm curious about.
And it's rare for me. I'm trying to think of it. The podcast gives us that opportunity to like talk to people that we don't know and dig in on their process, and so I find, especially since it's felt like I've had really limited opportunities to do this lately, catching up with old friends who also happen to be directors tends to be the circumstance where I'm talking to a director outside of the podcast. I had coffee with Matt Pollack the other day, but all of it still stands. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
You're really good at that. And I do think like a very valid question that can lean to great conversation is, hey, I love this thing you did. How did you get that job?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you will learn, I guarantee you, a lot from asking that question.
I think the root of the root of a conversation with another director is it's helpful to be at about their level.
Yeah.
So that you know what questions to ask, and also you can compare notes. So like, you know, somebody,
and if you're not at their level, like, don't pretend to be at their level.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Because I've had a lot of people do that to me, and I've probably done it a little bit to other people.
Sure, you did. You did. You tell the story about, you know, sending your reel to Band Apart or whatever, and that producer sitting you down and being like, this is what I'm trying to sell, right? So I think that's just an experience thing. But, you know, the point of being able to compare notes, if you're 25 and like someone offers you a job to shoot something for $1,000 and all of your 25-year-old friends are jealous of the $1,000 you got because they got paid $500, maybe that's not such a bad rate. If you're 40 and you're getting paid $1,000 and it's a $2 million commercial, you know, I mean, the math doesn't math there, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I'm going to, just because you brought up those specific numbers, I'm just going to, I want to dispel a myth that is out there in the world, which is that there is this idea that in advertising, the director should get about 10% of the budget. So if you were working on a $1 million commercial, then you should be paid $100,000. You're working on a $10,000 commercial that you should be paid $1,000. This is just not true. And I just, every single person I've ever met that talks about director rates has used this as kind of like a reference.
I often will use it as a reference when talking to EPs specifically about what my rate is. And this is what I always say. I'm always like, I'm bummed out if I cut you a deal on my rate. And then there's a whole bunch of mohos and it's a sad commercial. And the reverse is true, too. I don't want to be taking 10% of the budget when it really needs to be up on screen because I really want the work to be good. And then I'll typically say a number based off of my gut of like what the scale of the work that they're doing is. If 10%, like I say, like, hey, what, you know, 10% tends to be about what it makes sense as. I'm thinking this number. Does that line up with what your expectations are?
Yeah. And by the way, if the budget is $10,000, then maybe your rate should be 20% because you're doing like almost everything on your own.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But if the budget is $1 million, you're probably not going to get 10%. Like
that's true. That's
true. You're probably going to get 10% of A through K, which is, you know, on the budget software, the production budget, and this doesn't include post, and it doesn't include the $350,000 they gave Pete Davidson to be in your commercial or whatever it is.
Sure.
So it's like there's, I don't know, like it's great. It's great if you get 10% of the budget as the director, but it just really depends on so many other things. So I'm just going to put that out there for you directors. And if you're doing narrative stuff, it's probably going to be significantly lower.
Yeah, narrative stuff. I mean, like, even if it's not DGA, DGA tends to be like at least a North Star for some of that stuff. But like, it can be way, way below DGA, you know.
Yeah, but if you're getting like on those, you know, we talked about this previously. If you're getting like $40,000 to $50,000 on a primetime big 1 hour network drama, the budget of that episode is more than. $400,000, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, pretty much people don't really get that. But everyone is like, in their mind, is that that's how much they get. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they get more than that. There's no real rules, but I think if you're like going to a job and you're like super bummed that you didn't get 10%, that you're getting 8%, like, you should be happy. You have a job.
I think your point stands with like, what's the ultimate number, you know, because I think that there, your point of like A through K versus total production budget or like what a celebrity gets paid. Like if a celebrity's in your commercial, they're making $250,000 to $500,000, probably pretty typically a day.
Or a couple million. Yeah.
Or a couple million. Yeah. Yeah. It kind of depends. But like, yeah, $250,000 on the low end. I think there's a lot of different ways to slice it. Look, the bottom line is the number, your gut on like what you think the number should be is probably pretty close to what they're thinking as well. Right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think about like what I used to make versus what I make now. And it's like, still today, I'll just like one job will literally pay twice as much as another job for
it. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
The exact same amount of work.
I think also you've been going on a lot of coffees and you've been hearing a lot of numbers, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, do it. And I do want to just like, before we finish the episode, I want to just touch on people that don't know a lot of people that just moved to LA, newer people in the business, people that don't have a reel to show. You know, we talked a lot about like meeting with people that are at the same level as you in their career. And like, what if you're brand new to LA? You made some shorts, you just graduated film school. Like, I think it's kind of all the same as what we said. You'll just get a lot of more no's, you know, out of the gate, which means you just have to talk to more people, you know?
What I'm going to suggest is a very privileged thing. So just as a caveat, when I started, I got married December 2007. As we all remember, the economy just tanked in 2008. I came back from my honeymoon and there was like the office.
I recall they said this honeymoon butterfly effect, something like ruined the entire economy.
Yeah, some asshole went to Mexico and he came back and but literally the corporation that I was working for did no longer exist. Like I got a voicemail that was like, sorry, like it was all over. I was on unemployment, so I had like it. My cost of living was very low. We were still very young. You know, I would PA on things for free. I would do like social media for Strike TV for free. I made a lot of great contacts that way. You know, working screenwriters would, you know, buy you an appetizer at, you know, the Formosa or whatever. Anyway, yeah. So volunteer, be of service. So like, say you don't have a ton of connections that you can bring to the table, or you know the right person for the job that they're trying to fill or whatever. Just like being down to hang out and like help out on things will immediately expand your network and will also help you, you know, figure out what you want to do. Because when you're new, like you may think you want to be a director, you may think you want to be a cinematographer, so you may think you want to be a producer, and you might realize that you don't like any of those things.
Yeah. And Matt Enlow, just shoot at 101. Just go to UCB.
Sure.
Take an improv class, hang out with some people there. They will definitely want to make some things with you, and they will definitely know people that you can show your stuff to.
I'm curious about that, actually. Young people listening, kudos. Let me know if that's still a thing, because that used to be Mad in Love 101 when there was Funny or Die and sketch groups were constantly posting things on YouTube, and there was College Humor, and there was like a middle class comedy ladder where people could level up. And I've seen multiple think pieces about how that is over. And I was just on Vulture the other day. Our old pal and previous guest, Luke Kelly Klein, still writes a like the funniest things on the internet column for Vulture. And it's all TikToks. There's like one or two sketch groups. It used to be that, like, you know, there'd be a team of, you know,
Like Andy Samberg and his friends.
Yeah. Literally thousands of other people who are far less famous, but like ended up producing on The Bear, for instance.
Right. Or like Issa Rae and her stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Again, lots of examples of like less famous people as well. Like that was the way that
Sorry, go on.
They were just kind of like squads of people all kind of shooting videos together. But now that is not like the format du jour, I wonder, you know, if people do that now. Now people are just like on TikTok and they've got like a wig and they like make the eyelines make sense and, you know, do two characters at once. And that's like how everyone's breaking out. Which is not funny, but it's like, I don't know if UCB is the same nexus that it used to be.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else would be the nexus. Yeah.
That, I don't know either. I think about it all the time.
Instagram, TikTok. Yeah. Maybe it's TikTok.
Yes, but though that's like saying YouTube. And like there's not a geographic mecca for people to gravitate to. Like the beauty of TikTok in particular is that it solves the exposure problem, because it just surfaces what it thinks the algorithm thinks you're going to like and sees if it clicks or not, and you can go viral instantly and you don't build a following, right? The clip gets notoriety, the creator does not get notoriety. That is the core problem with TikTok. It is not a follower or fan based culture, it is a clip based culture. Like I don't say I'm a fan of a creator. I'm struggling to name many creators I like on TikTok. I'm a fan of TikTok, the platform. You know what I mean? Anyway,
go to TikTok, buy TikTok. We are big supporters of TikTok. Is there anything else you'd like to endorse?
Is that my endorsement? Are we into endorsements now? Is that what's happening?
Unpaid endorsements.
Yeah, I got two. One's an old school short film that my wife, actually that a listener, Clinton Cornwell, mentioned to her in relation to the short that she was shooting. And now I'm endorsing it on the show Full Circle. It's called Spider. It's by Nash Edgerton. Nash Edgerton's a filmmaker that we've talked about on the podcast before. He did Stunt City. He is Joel Edgerton's brother.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize. I didn't realize that. Anyway, he did a short called Spider that's probably 15, 20 years old now. I don't want to give anything away. It's the perfect example of like, it's anti-TikTok. It's like all slow burn and then explosion at the end. You're just like, oh, this twist is so fun. I couldn't see this coming. It's very like grounded and funny and weird. So that's the first one. Just Google it. It's on YouTube. Spider. Nash Edgerton.
Does it star Joel Edgerton?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
A young Joel Edgerton.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one I'm going to endorse. Are you familiar, Oren, with the Skadis IKEA line of pegboards and accessories? So it's just, you know, cheap particle board, plastic pegboard with kind of like long, like oval slats that you mount to a wall.
Love a good slat.
But then it's got little hooks and like modular hooks, modular shelves, modular buckets, short hooks, long hooks, little clips, baskets, all of that stuff, so that you can hang whatever you need to hang from your wall. And I installed one just the other day and I'm loving it. I've got like a lot, all of my storage is kind of like deep closet space basically. And so I was always like, I'd have my drill that I would use relatively frequently, just like either in front of a bunch of stuff, or it would be, I'd either have to like take it off to find the thing and then put it back or whatever. There's just like a couple things that I am using regularly that I'm happy to have at arm's length now. And that's made my desk a little bit more organized.
So you have it in front of your desk right now as we speak?
No, I have it on the wall mounted to the desk, mounted next to the desk, basically.
Can you reach your, can you grab your drill right now? Let me see if you can do it without standing up.
Well, I have to stand up.
Oh, come on. Okay.
Literally, I didn't even take a step. My feet were planted the whole time. You want a
hammer?
That's
pretty quick. That's pretty quick. Yeah, give me a hammer. If I had a hammer, it'd be a whole different podcast. Yeah, it's cool. And I see some people use it to hang clothes and stuff.
Yeah. It's versatile. It's not just for tools. It could be for office supplies. Mine's like a little bit of mixture. There's a lot of USB cables up there as well.
Yeah. And it's cool that it's named after your favorite genre of music.
Too hectic. Yeah, it's great. Oren.
What do I have? I freaking love YouTube. I have YouTube. I'm a YouTube Prime. Mm-hmm. What's it called? A YouTube Premium subscriber.
Is it not YouTube Red anymore?
No, YouTube Premium. It means, first of all, on my YouTube, when I go to YouTube.com, it says premium at the top left, which is mainly what I'm paying for. But I have no ads, which seems like not a big deal, especially for a guy that like claims to be into ads. Mm-hmm. But I can just hop around from video to video like it's no big thing. I don't have to ever wait. I don't have to skip things after 5 seconds. Anyway, this channel, I watched like every video on his channel. It's called Slice of Life. What's the URL? Let me see. Slice of Life Film is youtube.com/@sliceoflifefilm. This guy made a feature film. It takes place like in like the space race or something, the space program in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have no real clue what the feature film's about, but he used miniatures to create all these like incredible shots. I mean, it's like this epic film that this guy made like by himself. He's constantly like, yeah, this room looked kind of empty, so I had my dad put 6 suits on and I just shot him on a green screen and then I comped him into these seats. He's just like constantly showing all these tricks, just like little tiny things. He's like, yeah, this wall looked kind of plain, so I found the sconce image and I put it on the wall and now it looks good. And you're like, yeah, this guy like has a great understanding of how to make a shot feel big, and he literally made this movie with like toy cars and him on a green screen in his living room. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the, what was that Kung Fu movie back in the day that got like,
was it Kung Fu'd? Kung Fury. Kung Fury.
Kung Fury. Yeah. Kung Fury, which was this like awesome, like shot, like the, it just looks like this insane 80s action film. And it was all shot in like this guy's living room on one wrinkly green screen. So this guy has like a little more production value, but he's still like, yeah, I did this shot during the at night with a light. It looked crappy. So I reshot it the next day, like in the sun. And he has this awesome accent. I don't know where he's from, Eastern Europe or something. It's like very self-aware. And it's his movie just looks amazing. I haven't seen the movie. I actually have like zero interest in watching the movie, but every shot he describes is just so cool how he put it together. With relatively little money, he buys like everything on eBay. It's like, I needed a news van from the 1950s. So I bought it on eBay, like a miniature version. And he like laser prints out like labels. He designs like little graphics that he sticks on the models. And I don't know. I just like re-fell in love with filmmaking by watching this guy talk about how he made his movie on like I think he shot it on a Blackmagic 6K or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyhow, slice of life. I like it.
Awesome.
Well, we'd love to hear what you all think. If you recommend Seth unendorsed things or endorse things in an unpaid manner, please email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can find the podcast at justshootitpod across all social media. I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by him as well, along with Tyler Smarl. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.